welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, we hear the story, The Inexperienced Ghost, by H.G. Wells. But right now, it's the haunting hour with the tale, No Escape. This from NBC syndication, released in 1945.
This is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the Haunting Hour. Considerable imagination enters into the planning of the supposedly perfect murder. Considerable imagination is used so that time, place, alibi, and evidence are dealt with conclusively. Yet the most important piece of evidence that can expose the murderer and his crime is most often left intact. His imagination. His mind. Foggy April evening. Paul Perry in his penthouse apartment overlooking a backyard of rubbish and the East River is very busy tonight planning murder. Simple murder. First, he prepares his prompt. A chair is in the way. An end table obscures the path just a little. And that floor lamp might be turned over and broken in his rush to the window. The window. That's right. The window. The window through which Paul Perry will fling his wife and watch her plunge 16 floors to the yard below. Simple and final murder. The stage has been set. But first, there is a witness to dispose of.
Excuse me, Mr. Perry. But what should I do about Mrs. Perry's dinner? It's getting cold.
Never mind, Hannah. Mrs. Perry is probably eating out.
Yes, sir. Will there be anything else, Mr. Perry?
No. No, I don't think so. As soon as you finish your work, Hannah, you can take the evening off.
The stage has been set. But Mrs. Perry is working to foil her own murder. Wearing her gray coat and a red pork pie hat, Mrs. Perry left her penthouse apartment in the afternoon. Now it is after 8 o'clock. And where is Mrs. Perry?
Fourth Precinct, Homicide, Lieutenant Dugan speaking. Yeah, okay.
My name is Joan Perry. Mrs. Joan Perry, and I want you to protect me from my husband.
Hold everything, lady. You're in the wrong division. This is homicide.
I know. My husband is planning to murder me.
How do you know?
I know.
Has he threatened you?
No.
Have you any evidence of his planning to murder you?
No.
Well, I give up. Why does he want to murder you?
Because I won't give him a divorce. Oh, you've got to protect me. He's going to kill me. I know, I tell you, I know.
Has he hit you or beaten you at any time?
Oh, no.
Are there any grounds on which we can issue a warrant for his arrest?
I don't want him arrested. Then he'll suspect that I know.
Then what do you want from me?
I want you to protect me.
Well, lady, you're in the wrong place. What you need is a private bodyguard. Excuse me. Fourth Precinct, Homicide, Lieutenant Dugan speaking. Yeah. Hold it. Mrs. Perry! I'll call you back in a minute. Mrs. Perry! Give me the front desk. Hey, Joe, a lady wearing a gray coat and a red hat is leaving the building. Stop her. Oh. No, never mind.
Something's wrong with the switch. The lights don't go on. Paul! Paul! Hannah! Is anybody... Perry.
Good morning, Hannah. Well, you needn't bother with a setting for Mrs. Perry. She called last night to say that she was staying at her mother's for a few days.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's on the menu this morning?
Orange juice, eggs and sausages, cake and coffee.
Great. I'm hungry.
I'll get it, Mr. Perry. The delivery boy from the cleaners to pick up Mrs. Perry's clothes.
It's the... what?
The delivery boy for Mrs. Perry's clothes.
Tell the boy to come in here.
Oh, you want the delivery boy in here?
Yes, bring him in.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Perry.
Shouldn't have jumped down Hannah's throat like that. It's probably some mistake.
Now, what's cooking, mister?
You're here for Mrs. Perry's clothes?
You got it the first time.
Well, when did she give you the order?
She was in a store first thing this morning.
She came into your store this morning?
That's right. And what is this, the third degree?
Huh? Oh, no. No. You see, Mrs. Perry is staying at her mother's for a few days, and this sounds like a practical joke. Can you describe her?
Not how. She's kind of neat looking, and she was wearing a gray coat with a red hat, if you call that a hat.
That's Joan. But last night...
Look, do I get the clothes or don't I?
What? Oh, you'd better come back some other time.
Why don't you say so in the first place? I haven't got all day to hang around.
Maybe she's all right. Maybe she didn't get hurt. Oh, but that's ridiculous. 16 stories down to the yard and no ledges to land on while falling. But I'd better make certain... No, it's a clean drop down to the yard. Can't see her from here with this fog. Maybe she's not there. But she's got to be. She's got to. Better go down to see for myself. Can't see her. But she's here someplace. You just don't get up and walk away after you fall 16 floors. You don't. No, you don't. Maybe behind this box. No. No, she's not here. She's not here! Joan! Joan, where are you? Why are you hiding? Better watch it. I'm starting to act like a lunatic. There must be a logical explanation to all this. Maybe she fell into the river. Yes. Yes, that's it. She fell into the river and was swept away with the current. But then, who was in the tailor shop this morning? Yes, Hannah? What is it?
There's a man here to see Mrs. Perry.
Well, did you tell him she's away for a few days?
He says that Mrs. Perry made an appointment to see him here.
Where is he?
In the foyer.
All right, tell him I'll see him.
Yes, sir.
How do you do, Mr. Perry? Harvey's my name. Hope I'm not disturbing you. But your wife made an appointment this morning to see me today at 2:30, and here it is, 2:30. Right on the button. Always prompt. That's me. It inspires confidence.
You saw my wife this morning?
Just missed her by a few minutes. I get to my office at 10 every morning, right on the button. Always prompt, but... yes, I was a little late this morning.
Well, then... with whom did she make that appointment?
My secretary took care of the details. She opens the office every morning. A very efficient young lady, Miss Shepherd is. Yes, sir, very efficient.
Mr. Harvey, I think your secretary made a mistake.
What? What do you mean?
Well, you see, my wife couldn't have been in your office this morning because she's with her mother in the country since last night. It must be two other people.
My gosh, this is something, isn't it? I wonder how Miss Shepherd made such a mistake. She's very efficient. Do you mind if I use your phone? I'd like to call my office.
Help yourself.
Thank you. I'm sorry to be such a nuisance. Hello? Miss Shepherd? Harvey speaking. I'm checking on that 2:30 appointment you arranged for me this morning. There seems to be some misunderstanding. Yes? Yes, Mrs. Perry. And the address? By gosh, that's right. Just a moment. Well, Mr. Perry, my secretary just confirmed this meeting. She herself spoke to your wife this morning.
Ask her to describe Mrs. Perry.
Well, Miss Shepherd, what did this Mrs. Perry look like? Yes, young, good-looking, wearing a gray coat and a red hat. Just a moment. Anything else, Mr. Perry?
No.
That's all, Miss Shepherd. I'll be back at the office within the hour. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm calling my wife at dinner time, and I'll ask her about it. Sorry that you had to come here on a wild goose chase.
Oh, it's all in the day's work. Well, by the way, if you should ever want to get in touch with me, here's my card. Good day.
Frank Harvey, broker, life insurance, accident insurance.
Hello.
Hello, Mimi, darling.
I was wondering when you'd call. What time are you coming over?
About 7. Mimi.
Yes?
Do you know a man by the name of Frank Harvey?
No. Should I?
I don't know.
Is anything wrong?
Wrong? I know there's nothing wrong, but it's a little late for April Fool's Day.
Are you sure you're all right? You sound as if this fog is getting you.
The fog? Yeah. Yeah, that's it. See you at 7.
I'll be waiting.
She said the fog is getting me. The fog. Maybe it is. Hello?
I'd like to speak with Mr. Paul Perry.
Speaking.
My name is Baxter. I'm the credit manager at the Mapleton department store.
Very interesting.
There's a Mrs. Perry here, and she wants to open a charge account with us. She tells...
There's a who?
Mrs. Perry. Mrs. Joan Perry.
And she's in the store now?
Why, certainly.
What does she look like?
I beg your pardon?
Describe her. What's she wearing?
Just a moment. She's wearing a gray coat and a red hat.
Keep her there. Don't let her get away. I'll be right over. Which way to the credit manager's office?
The second aisle on your left.
Yes?
Well, where is she?
Where is who?
My wife, Joan Perry. You called and said she was here. Well, where is she?
I'm sure I don't know.
Well, someone called me a few minutes ago, said his name was Baxter. Is your name Baxter?
Well, yes, but I didn't call you.
It's a trap. That's what it is. A trap. And I walked right into it. But who wants to trap me? Who? That man on the phone said his name was Baxter. It wasn't Baxter. But whoever he is, he can't know anything. Say, maybe I didn't get a phone call from Baxter. Maybe I'm just letting my imagination run away with me. Yes. Yes, that's it. No one called. No one.
It's the delivery boy from the cleaners to pick up Mrs. Perry's clothes.
Look, do I get the clothes or don't I?
Harvey's my name. Your wife made an appointment. Always prompt. That's me.
Stop it! Stop it! I've got to get hold of myself. I can't give myself away to Mimi.
Darling.
Sorry I'm late, Mimi.
I suppose you had the usual trouble trying to get away from your wife.
She's not home. Mimi, let's go away. Far away, someplace where no one will know us, where no one will bother us.
It wouldn't be right.
Okay, then forget it. Forget it for now, anyway. Come on, let's get going.
All right, darling. I'll be ready in a minute.
Hope the fog lets up soon. Might as well be in London.
How do you like it? How do you like my new hat?
Where did you get it?
I just bought it today.
Take it off.
Take it off? Why? I like it.
I said take it off. It's Joan's hat.
Oh, Paul, why must everything remind you of Joan?
Take it off!
All right. I'll take it off.
I'm sorry. It's just that I hate her so.
I know.
Darling, let's not stay here all night gabbing about her. We're going out to have fun.
Yes. Yes, we're going out to have fun.
All right, then. Let's go.
Where to?
Haven't you heard? The circus is in town.
I haven't had such fun since I was a kid.
I'm glad. Darling, we'll always have fun, won't we?
Of course, dear. Why did you ask?
Nothing or nobody will stand in our way.
Now, stop being morbid. Come on, I want to see the sideshows.
Hello, Mimi.
What? Frank, how are you? Oh, I almost forgot. Frank, this is Paul Perry.
Oh, it's all right, Mimi. I've already met Mr. Harvey.
Harvey? Paul, this is Frank Dugan.
I don't know by what name you know him, but he was at my house this afternoon as Mr. Harvey. Oh, by the way, Mr. Harvey, did you sell many insurance policies today?
Look, Paul, a joke's a joke.
Just a minute, Mimi. I'm afraid, my friend, that you're confusing me with someone else. I've never seen you before in my life, and my name isn't Harvey.
Well, if that's the way you want it, pleased to meet you, Mr. Dugan.
Same here. Well, I have to look for my friends.
Call me, Frank, when you get a free moment.
I will, Mimi. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Frank. Now, Paul, what was all this nonsense about some insurance?
Oh, I tell you, Mimi, that man came to see Joan this afternoon about some insurance.
Either you're drunk or you're imagining things, and I haven't seen you take a drink in the last 2 hours.
That Dugan or Harvey even gave me his business card.
So what?
So what? That card said Frank Harvey, broker, life insurance, accident insurance.
Harvey may have given you such a card, but I'm certain that Frank Dugan didn't.
What makes you so certain that Dugan and Harvey aren't one and the same person?
Because Frank Dugan happens to be a police lieutenant with the homicide squad. You've been acting strangely all evening.
Strangely? Please, darling, don't nag.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I'm worried.
What about?
You, silly.
There's nothing to worry about.
I hope you're right.
Maybe I'm imagining things. Maybe I never saw Harvey. But he gave me that business card. At least I think he did. That card. I must get that card. It's in my blue suit, I think. And I've got to get rid of Mimi. I've got to get home and find that card.
Thanks for taking me home, darling.
I'll call you in the morning.
You're so abrupt, it's as if you're anxious to get rid of me.
I've got to get home. Good night, Mimi. That card. Ah, Frank Harvey, broker, life insurance, accident insurance, 75 Johnson Place. So I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't having nightmares. For a while, I was beginning to doubt my own sanity. But here it is, all right. Now to find the house. 75 Johnson Place.
Hello. Has Lieutenant Dugan come in yet? In 15 minutes? Well, please tell him that Mimi Foster called. I think that something's happened to Mr. Paul Perry. Will you tell him to meet me at Mr. Perry's apartment on East 73rd Street the moment he comes in? Thank you. Goodbye.
Hey, buddy. You help a fella out?
What's that?
I ain't had nothing to eat all day, mister. You spare a dime? I'm hungry, mister. I've been hungry all day.
I'll make it worth your while if you'll tell me where Johnson Place is.
Oh, this is Johnson Place. What number?
75.
Yeah, let's see. That's right along here. Come on, I'll show you, mister. Yeah, that's 67, 71. Then there's an empty lot. Yeah.
There is no 75.
Maybe it's on the other side of the street.
No, there's nothing on the other side of the street. Empty spaces, only empty spaces.
Hello, Paul.
What? What are you doing here? In front of my door?
I was worried, and when I called and there was no answer, I came right over. I didn't phone from the lobby. I came right up in the elevator. I was just ringing your doorbell. Where were you?
I just stepped out for a pack of cigarettes. Come in. Sit down.
Paul?
Yes.
What's eating you?
Not a thing. I feel great.
But before, at the circus,
I took a walk and the fog cleared my head. Sit down. I'll get you a drink. You look as if you could use one. Just like last night. Same scene, same fog. The path to the window in the living room. Hannah out for the evening. But tonight I have a new leading lady. Well, what shall we drink to?
Let's toast your quick divorce and our happy marriage.
Very nicely put. And I drink to you, my sweet little double-crossing wench. You dropped your drink, my pet.
I'm going home. You're drunk.
You're not going home. Sit down.
What do you want?
This is goodbye, Mimi.
Well, that suits me fine. Goodbye.
Sit down. You don't understand. This is goodbye. Curtains. Fade out.
No. No.
Dugan can't help you now. Nobody can. Nobody helped Joan last night.
Joan?
Where were you watching from when she went out the window?
Oh!
Go on. Go on. Yell your head off. You'll never be heard above those river noises.
Paul, I don't want to die.
Oh, it doesn't hurt. Ask Joan. She'll tell you.
Oh.
It's as easy as falling off a log. Only this way, it's falling out the window. And you've got a farewell symphony. Listen.
Oh.
That's beautiful music.
Why? Why do you want to kill me?
Because you're the only witness to last night.
No.
Because you're trying to throw me over for Dugan.
No.
Because you're going to turn me in so that I can't stand in your way.
No.
Because I killed for you in the first place.
No, 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 that's not true. I didn't know about Joan until you told me, and I love you, you poor fool. I love you.
Oh, you lie. I don't believe
you. It's the truth.
You think you can trick me again like you've been doing all day?
I don't know what you're talking about.
First for the cleaners, dressing up as Joan. Then getting Dugan to pose as a phony insurance salesman.
No, tonight at the circus was the first time I'd seen Frank in a month.
It's a shame. You would have made a great actress.
You've got to believe me. I'm telling the truth. No. No, please. Please. Paul. No.
Paul. I got here just in time.
Frank, he suddenly went crazy.
No, he didn't. He's as sane as you are, Mimi. Wait till I put the cuffs on him.
And he's not dead?
No. No, I'm not dead. Well, that'll keep you, Perry. You're under arrest.
I'll sue the state for this.
Oh, no, you won't. Murder is a tough rap to beat.
You're crazy. You can't prove murder without the corpus delicti.
Mrs. Perry, or what there's left of her, is on a slab at the morgue. I was too late last night.
But she jumped.
Just as Mimi almost jumped. No good, Perry. Besides, I heard your confession.
Oh, Frank, how did you know?
We expected this second attempt at murder. We couldn't prevent the first, but you weren't in any danger, Mimi. We knew exactly what he would do step by step. We planned it so.
What do you mean?
We knew he killed his wife, but we needed a confession. So we worked on the only part of him we knew would be vulnerable, his mind. No matter how well planned a murder may be, the murderer can't escape himself. No matter how you look at it, there's no escape.
The Haunting Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday from NBC syndication from 1945. It's an hour of horror. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now, Edge of Your Seat Radio with the H.G. Wells story, The Inexperienced Ghost. First published in the Strand magazine in March of 1902, the author's Playhouse adapts it next on NBC from December 4th, 1944.
Author's Playhouse. Now listen, Clayton, old chap. Do you expect us to believe that you actually met a ghost in the club last night?
That's correct. Not only did I meet the blighter, but I got him out of no end of a jam.
You mean that the ghost was in trouble and that you helped him?
Of course. You see, this young ghost had come to haunt the club. Then he forgot how to make himself disappear. Vanish. No end of a pickle for a ghost, I can tell you. Who was this ghost found by Clayton in the Mermaid Club? How did he get into such trouble? Well, for the answers, we take you back to a room in the London Club, where Author's Playhouse presents tonight a story by H.G. Wells, the mysterious, hilarious, madcap tale of The Inexperienced Ghost.
The scene in which John Clayton told us his last story comes back very vividly to my mind. Sanderson and I had come down to London that morning, seeking to join our old friend Clayton for a pleasant weekend at the Mermaid Club. Clayton had arrived a day earlier and spent the night at the club, which indeed gave him the opening of his story. We had dined and were in that mood of tranquil kindliness when men will suffer a story. When Clayton began to tell one, we naturally supposed he was lying. Maybe that indeed he was lying, but that's not for me to judge. This I know, and Sanderson can vouch for it too, that the incredulous story began when Clayton rose from his seat by the open fire, stretched himself comfortably, and called to me.
I say, you know that I spent the night here alone, don't you, Evans?
Of course, old chap. Sorry we couldn't get here sooner. Sanderson and I had the dickens of a time getting down to London even this late in the season.
I wish you had been here, though, because... Well, last night, I caught a ghost.
You caught a what?
A ghost. Oh, that's wonderful. Superb. Where is it? Well, Sanderson, this wasn't exactly a regular ghost, you understand. As a matter of fact, I don't think this ghost will ever come back again.
You mean to tell us that you caught a ghost in the club, Clayton?
Precisely.
And you didn't keep it?
I didn't have the heart. I know what you're thinking. But the fact is, it really was a ghost. And I'm as sure of that as I'm talking to you both now. I'm not joking. I mean what I say.
I say, old chap, you do look serious. Suppose you tell us about it.
I will. But please close the door first, Evans. We don't want to upset eavesdroppers with rumors of a ghost.
Very good, Clayton.
But things like ghosts, why, they just don't come around in the best London clubs, old man.
Yeah, here in the Mermaid Club of all places.
It's the strangest thing that ever happened in my whole life. Well, you know, I never believed in ghosts or anything of that sort before, ever. Then before you know it, I bag one in a corner, and the whole business is in my hands.
You mean you talk to it?
For the space, probably, of an hour.
Rather chatty.
The poor devil was in trouble.
Really? Oh, I say, what sport?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, he turned out to be a very weak character. I felt quite sorry for him at first. You know, I found that a ghost doesn't change much from what he was in real life. His character doesn't, that is. It's obvious to me now that most haunting ghosts must have a great strength and fixity of purpose. In order to haunt, a ghost must be a veritable monomaniac and as obstinate as a mule. Otherwise, he'd never come back again and again, would he? This poor creature wasn't.
Oh, he wasn't.
No. I say in all kindliness, but that is the plain truth of the case. Even at the first glance, he struck me as weak.
Where did you see this ghost?
I came upon him in the long passage upstairs. His back was towards me, and I saw him first. Right off, I knew him for a ghost. He was transparent and whitish-looking. I could see right through his chest the little window at the end of the corridor. Suddenly, the window blew open, and the night wind came streaming in to flap the curtains furiously into his translucent body. He jumped back as though the sudden gust had frightened him. One hand sought the paneling of the wall, as though for support. The other fluttered to his mouth. He was lean, with scrubby hair, thin neck, bad shoulders, baggy trousers, an altogether pitiful sight. Then I started up the staircase, as quietly as I could. Even so, my steps appeared to ring out in the silence of the empty club. As I walked toward him, he started to turn around. I stopped dead at the sight, taking him in. I wasn't a bit afraid. I was surprised and interested. Then he turned on me sharply. I saw the face of an immature young man, a weak nose and feeble chin. We stood for an instant, facing each other. Then he seemed to shiver with fear and almost turned to run. As I looked at him rather curiously, he appeared to gather his nerves together, as though remembering his high calling as a ghost. Drew himself up, projected his face, raised his arms, and spread them in the approved ghost fashion, and came towards me, his little jaw dropping. It sounded ridiculous, almost funny. Being alone in the Mermaid Club, I had had 4 or 5 whiskies for company, and I was as solid as a rock, and no more frightened then than I'd been assailed by a frog. Seeing that I was holding my ground, he tried again.
Boo! Boo!
Boo yourself.
I'm a ghost. Go away.
Nonsense. Stubborn nonsense. You don't belong to this place. What are you doing here?
I'm halting. Be frightened and run away.
Oh, cut it out. Your feeble gasp is really annoying. Are you a member of the Mermaid Club?
No, sir, I'm not. I'm a ghost, you know.
Yes, so you told me. Well, that doesn't give you the run of the place. Is there anyone you want to see or anything of that sort?
No, sir.
Then what are you doing here?
You
ask me, you look like the ghost of a silly, awkward, aimless young man.
I'm haunting.
Well, you haven't any business to. Not in the club. You've already admitted you aren't a member.
But I'm a ghost. A real ghost.
That may well be. But this is a respectable private club in London. You can't stroll about the halls in a careless way like this. Why, you could easily scare the members out of their wits. I suppose you didn't think of that, did you?
No, sir, I didn't.
Well, you should have. You haven't any claim on this place, have you?
No, sir.
I mean, you weren't murdered here or anything of that sort?
No, sir. I only thought, being that this place is old and oak-paneled...
That is no excuse. Your coming here is a mistake. If I were you, I'd vanish immediately.
Well, the fact is, sir...
I'd vanish and immediately...
That's the point. I can't.
You can't?
No, sir. That's something I've forgotten. I've been hanging around here since midnight last night, hiding in the cupboards of the empty bedrooms and things like that. I'm flurried. I've never gone haunting before, and it seems to put me out.
Put you out?
Yes, sir. I've tried several times, and it doesn't seem to come off. I wave my arms about in the right manner, I think, but one of the movements must have slipped my mind. I just can't make myself vanish.
What's that you say?
I just can't make myself vanish.
Well, now, brace up, old chap. It can't be as bad as all that. Here, let me take your arm. Whoop. My hand went right through you. Wake up the servants downstairs. Now, gather yourself together and follow me into my room. We'll talk this matter over.
All right, but it won't help. I just can't disappear.
Do you mean to tell us, Clayton, that you brought your ghost into this very room?
Naturally. He looked at me in such an abject way that I felt compelled, against my better judgment, to help him out. After all, it wouldn't have been sporting to have left him to the servants.
You were in a spot, weren't you, old man?
That isn't the half of it. Trying to maneuver what appeared to be a puff of smoke down the corridor and up here isn't easy. I'm afraid that at times I almost lost my composure. Anyhow, I remember going into several bedrooms. It was lucky I was the only person in this wing, but I finally found my traps and knew that we were on home ground. After we were comfortably settled in my room, my ghostly friend refused to sit down. Instead, he preferred to flit up and down the room. In a little while, we were deep in a long and serious talk. He explained that one had to make a series of passes and complicated gestures with the hands. And that's how he had materialized and come in, and that's how he must get out. It was a weird conversation, but I could see the gleam of the copper candlestick through him, the light on the brass fender, and the corners of the framed engravings on the wall. Although he didn't possess a particularly honest face, I could see that he was telling me the truth. Then he started to moan.
Oh, I just
I'll never get back. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'll never get back.
You get back to where?
Where I came from. I can't tell you anymore.
You mean you can't tell me what it's like over there?
Oh, no. It's against the regulations.
It does seem to me that you've got yourself into a very awkward position, old boy.
I'm really a dismal failure. A dismal, dismal failure. Have been all my life, really. You know, I've always failed in everything. I couldn't win in games or pass examinations at school or anything.
What were you back in my world?
I was a senior English master in a London private school.
How did you
become a ghost? Well, I went down into the basement one night with a candle to look for leakage of gas.
Married?
Unengaged. The gas incident blew that up, too. And I'm miserable now. They stuck me in with a group of very young ghosts. Really children, you know. And all they think about is going haunting and things like that. They seem to think haunting is a tremendous adventure.
And tonight was your first time?
Yes. And you saw how well I made out. They told me it would be a wonderful lark. Some lark. Just another dismal failure to add to my record. Nothing else.
Now, don't brood on these things too much. The thing you've got to do is get out of this. Get out of this sharp.
You're the first one who's ever been kind to me.
All right, now, all right. For the love of Pete, don't bawl. Well, being a ghost is bad enough. I don't think I could stand a weeping ghost.
Can't you help me?
Well, I'll try. Now, you've got to pull yourself together. Concentrate on vanishing.
Oh, it's no good. It won't work.
You say you have to make certain passes with your hands?
That's right. But I've forgotten.
No more of that sort of talk. Now, you try. Try.
Yes, sir. I'll try. One. Two. Three. Oh, no, that's not right.
Try again. Harder.
One. Two. Three. Four. Oh, I just can't disappear, sir.
Well, fellows, as you can understand, it was quite a situation.
Now, hold on a minute, Clayton. What exactly did you want your ghost to try?
Well, passes, of course.
Passes? What do you mean, passes?
A complicated series of gestures and passes with the hands. That's how he'd come in, and that's how he had to get out. Lord, what a time I had.
My dear Clayton, how could any series of passes ever...
I tell you, Evans, I don't know how. All I know is that you do passes, and he did at least.
Did you observe them?
Oh, yes, I certainly did. There we were, I and this vague ghost. Not a sound except our voices and the faint panting he made when he swung his arm. There was the bedroom candle, sometimes flaring up into a tall, lean, astonished flame for a space.
I can't. I never shall be able to.
Now, pull yourself together, will you?
I can't do it.
And so, in order to encourage him, I began to help him.
You began to help the ghost?
Yes, that's right.
Help him with what?
Why, the passes, of course.
That is interesting. You mean to say this ghost of yours actually gave away...
Yes, Sanderson. He did his level best to give away the whole confounded barrier between this world and the next.
But he couldn't have. You would have gone there, too.
We'll come to that later, Evans. Let Clayton continue.
Our ghost tried and tried. And he despaired. It looked hopeless. And then suddenly he got up abruptly from his chair.
Look, you've seen all the passes. I do something wrong somewhere. Suppose you go through the whole performance so I can watch you.
What good would that do?
Well, I believe that if I could see it, I could spot at once what's wrong.
All right. I'll do it if you think it'll work. Now, how did you start again?
With the left hand. Like this.
Oh, yes, I remember now. Like this?
Yes, that's it.
All right, I'll try it. One. Two.
That's it.
Three.
Just continue.
Four?
Like that. Yes, yes, that's right.
Five?
Oh, no. Bring the palm up and over.
Six?
That's better. Now with the right hand.
Seven?
That's right. Good. Fine. Excellent. Now I know.
Know what?
I know. But I can't do it if you look at me. I really can't.
Oh, come now. After all, didn't I...
I think that's what it's been all along. I'm such a nervous fellow that your presence puts me out. Will you please leave the room?
Now, wait a minute. Don't you think it's only fair that I see how it's being done?
But I can't do it if you're here.
Well, you've got to try, that's all. I'm not leaving.
Oh, this isn't fair at all. Please leave the room.
I definitely will not.
Oh, please don't be stubborn. Can't you understand? I cannot do it if you look at me.
Well, suppose I turn my back to you.
I want you to leave the room.
I will not. That's final.
You'll turn your back?
Yes.
Well, all right. You can do that.
Is this all right?
No. Turn a little further. That's better. Now, I'll start again, and this time I know it will work. One, two...
Naturally, I wanted to see, but he was so obstinate.
Three...
So when I turned, I made very sure that I was facing the wardrobe mirror.
Four...
He started off the same way. I followed his actions through the looking glass.
Five...
Around with his arms and his hands.
Six...
Then with a rush that came the last gesture of all, stand erect and open your arms. And thus he stood. And then...
Seven.
And then he didn't. He wasn't. I wheeled around from the looking glass. There was nothing. I was alone with the flaring candles and a staggering mind. What had happened? Had anything happened? Had I been dreaming? And then I stood there, grave and sober as a judge, feeling confoundedly queer. And that's all that happened.
And I suppose you went right to bed then?
Of course. What else was there to do?
Clayton, I have a few questions.
Oh, yes?
You say you saw the ghost do those passes?
I did.
Do you remember them?
Yes, I'm sure I do.
Could you do them yourself, alone?
I'm quite sure I could.
Why don't you do them now and show us?
Oh, what would be the use, Sanderson? The passes wouldn't work for him.
Yes, but suppose they did. Suppose they did, Evans.
I'm positive that I can do them.
Well, then by all means, let's see them.
I'd rather you didn't, Clayton.
Why, Evans, why?
Well, I don't know. Only I wish he didn't.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Do you mean you believe Clayton's story?
Yes, Sanderson, I do.
Thank you, Evans. I appreciate your intelligence.
Oh, now, don't get mad, Clayton. You're too good a liar for us. Most of your yarn was all right. At least I can say it was very amusing.
I'm indeed happy that I was able to amuse you.
But that disappearance, well, it was almost convincing. Come on, now. Suppose you just show us a few of the movements.
If you wish. Now watch. One. Two.
Yes, not bad.
Three. Four.
Not bad.
Five.
Yes, excellent.
Six.
Yes.
Seven.
Yes.
Do you wish a further demonstration?
That's really not bad at all. You really put things together in a most amazing fashion. But there is one little detail out of the way.
No, you mean the same gesture which our ghost friend couldn't get either? Is that it?
Yes. You know most of this business, and particularly how you invented it, I don't understand at all. But that last particular gesture, I do.
What do you mean?
There happens to be a series of gestures connected with a certain branch of esoteric masonry. Probably you know.
Do I, Sanderson?
Oh, of course you do. How else could you be able to do those passes? Let me show you the one that's wrong.
I don't think you should, Sanderson.
Oh, come now. I don't see what harm I could do by telling him the proper twist. After all, if he knows, he knows. If he doesn't, he doesn't. That's all.
I know nothing except what the poor ghost let out last night.
Well, anyhow, here's the ending of that movement. Watch me, will you? Four. Five. Now, do you see? Six.
Oh, I get it. It's the left hand that goes. I see.
That's right. You've got it.
And that means that I can now do the whole thing and do it right. If I were to begin, then...
Clayton, don't do it.
Oh, let him be, Evan. Matter is indestructible, you know that. You don't suppose for one moment, do you, that any amount of jiggery-pokery of this sort is going to snatch Clayton into the world of the shades, do you? Why, of course not. It's preposterous.
Well, I'd leave it alone, that's what I say.
As far as I'm concerned, Clayton, you can try till your arms drop off at the wrist. There's only one way out of this world for mortal man, and you're a good 30 years away from that.
All right, Sanderson. Get me a good stiff scotch and soda, and by the beard of Ella, I'll do it.
Are you quite ready now, Clayton?
Don't do it, please. Listen to me for once. You don't know what you're dealing with. There are many things which we're not supposed to know. To tamper with them only means that you...
You're right in believing me, Evans. But you don't have to worry about anything. Yes, Sanderson is all wrong. I did tell the truth, and I do know the passes. I shall do them, and I shall vanish. I shall get to the last gesture, and as it swishes through the air, presto, this hearthrug will be vacant, this room will be blank amazement, and a respectably dressed gentleman of 40 will plump into the world of shame.
You won't succeed, Clayton.
I certainly will.
But man, the whole thing is against all common sense.
I decline to argue any further. Well, I'm ready to begin. One.
I've got a stiff feeling right from
two.
The back of my skull down to the...
Be quiet. Three.
I don't like this at all.
Oh, shush.
Four. Very good, Clayton. So far, your waving hands are very convincing.
Five.
Make him stop, Sanderson. My teeth are tingling.
Six.
Make him stop.
There. He's coming to the last gesture now.
Seven.
He's finished.
There he is, standing with his arms wide open, looking quite impressive. And as I told you, nothing happened.
Oh, no? Then what am I doing standing beside my own body?
Look, his face. He's going to fall. He's collapsing. Go, quick, catch him.
That's just my body, you godfellow. Can't you see me? The real me standing beside you.
Don't drop him.
Look at his face.
Ghastly, isn't it?
Oh, it's changing. Look at it.
Of course. I say, I do look rather queer, don't I?
It's like a house when the lights go out. No expression at all. I'll open his vest and shirt so he can breathe. There, that does it.
I guess the excitement was just a bit too much for him. Oh, bravo, the decanter's empty. I'll just go for some brandy.
Poor old Clayton. I knew you shouldn't have done it.
Listen, Evans, old man, I'm really all right. It's just a joke, you know.
I wish Sanderson would hurry with that brandy.
I wish you could see this as I do, Evans. There you are, holding up my head and looking very sad, while I, or my ghost, sits comfortably across from you in this armchair. Oh, it's very curious. I'm sure it's never been done before.
Wake up, Clayton. Wake up, old man. You look as though you'd seen a ghost.
Oh, seen one? I am one, you old fool. But just wait until I get back into my body. We'll certainly have a laugh on old Sanderson.
Mr. Clayton, what are you doing here?
What's that?
It's me, the ghost. But you seem to be one, too.
Why, hello. Yes, I just wanted to show my friends that I could make myself disappear as you did.
Oh, sir. But you weren't supposed to watch me.
Well, I did. In the mirror. But see here. After all the trouble I went to help you disappear, you turn up again. And what do you mean by that? Don't stand over there beside my body. Evans might look up and get the scare of his life.
Please don't shout at me. He can't see either of us, you know.
Finally, come, Sanderson.
Well, you certainly took your time.
Well, I had to go all the way down to the servants' quarters. Here it is. Hold him up, will you, while I pour some of this brandy? Here we are. Yes, that will do it, I think.
There. He doesn't move. How about his heartbeat?
Oh, normal, I should imagine. But I'll check it just to make sure. I guess the little bedtime story that he told us.
What's the matter, Sanderson?
But it can't be. It can't.
What is it?
This is something beyond human comprehension, Evan, but Clayton is dead.
He's dead.
How ridiculous.
Oh, but it isn't, Mr. Clayton.
Shh, listen. He has actually passed into the world of shades as only a mortal can, by dying.
But that's outrageous. Why didn't he...
What caused his becoming a ghost? The passes, the incantation, or just sudden heart failure?
That's not a matter for our judging. It's just one of those riddles that must remain unsolved. All that we know for certain is that in the very instant he concluded those passes, Clayton fell before us, dead.
No, listen, I'm coming back.
I'm not really dead.
Oh, but you are, Mr. Clayton. You really are, you know.
Let us go downstairs and wake the servants, Sanderson. There's no more we can do.
No, wait. Don't go away. Look, Sanderson, heavens, I'm coming back.
It won't do you any good to follow, sir. They can't see you.
No, they can't. Listen, young fellow. You got me into this.
Oh, don't look at me like that, sir. I couldn't help it.
Oh, you couldn't. Wasn't it you who forgot how to vanish?
Yes, but...
And wasn't it you who brought your troubles to me?
Yes, but don't look at me like that, Mr. Clayton.
And wasn't it because I helped you to vanish that I got into this state?
I'm sorry, but
you're sorry. I like that. But listen, you can jolly well start finding a way to get me back into my body.
That's impossible. It's never been done, you know. Don't touch me, Mr. Clayton. Stay away from me. I'm a ghost.
So am I, at present. But I'm not going to get you out of this club until you found a way to get me back into my body. Do you hear?
But that means we may stay here in the club forever and ever.
You have heard H.G. Wells' story, The Inexperienced Ghost, adapted for Author's Playhouse by Guy DeVry and directed by Mr. Norman Felton.
The Author's Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from December 4th, 1944 on NBC. And that wraps this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBunier. Thanks for tuning in.